Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thanks, and welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast here, sponsored by Pliable, where we're always ready to roll. And today, we've got a great guest for the name, image, and likeness space. We are talking with professional attorney Josh Freezer, of principal attorney at Freezer Legal, and his practice is focused on the representation of athletes, agents, entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses. And he really provides a lot of unique experiences and education that I think are going to be really attractive to our audience today. So welcome into the podcast, Josh. Great to have you.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to discuss some of the legal implications behind the name, image, and likeness industry and college athletics as a whole.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to talk about over the last year and a half as this space continues to evolve. I wanted to start out with how you got into your position today as an attorney and what kind of motivated you to get into the field.
Yeah, that's a great question. So my introduction to the sports industry came through the academic perspective. I studied sport marketing and management as an undergrad at Indiana University, decided I wanted to continue to further specialize in the sports field. And I chose to go to Marquette University for law school, which has one of the premier sports law programs in the country. So that was my introduction to the sports law space from the academic perspective. And then I sort of further got into the college athletic space through some work experience at the NCAA. I spent a time working there for the Office of the Committees on Infractions, which deals with the infractions process at the NCAA. And from there, I decided when the name, image, likeness era came about to go out on my own and start my own law firm. To me, I sort of saw it as an opportunity to represent student athletes holistically beyond just NIL. And I think one of the unique things about the last couple of years that we've seen is student athletes have gone from amateurs in the true sense to now having so many business opportunities where they need to be focused on legal implications beyond just signing NIL contracts. There are things like trademarks and long-term intellectual property rights and business planning and tax law that sort of all is part of it now. And for me, my practice is full service for student athletes beyond just NIL contracts. So if they're signing with an agent or registering a trademark, anything like that, I can help them out with.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's really interesting because the space is evolving so quickly. There's even high school athletes that, of course, are starting to jump into the game. And so you've got parents involved and decisions and things like that. And I think that that's a whole nother area because, as I've seen, you know, you look at these college athletes, well, the next generation is noticing, you know, and I think that as they continue to evolve, there's going to be a lot more at the high school level as well. They're going to want to get in earlier. They're probably going to make some mistakes earlier because they don't have the education or the knowledge that you're providing, obviously, at the college level. Let's start by talking about some of the common questions that you get from athletes related to name, image, and likeness, or some of the things that you think, you know, really need to be addressed right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think the most common question I get about name, image, and likeness contracts are long-term intellectual property rights. And to me, that is so apparent is sort of what are you agreeing to long-term? What are you giving up long-term? And, you know, a lot of the NIL contracts that we see have clauses like in perpetuity or perpetual rights to a student athlete's NIL. And for me, it's you need to think big picture and you need to think long term, sort of regardless of what the upfront dollars are going to be. You need to think about 3, 4, 5 years down the line. If you're a collegiate student athlete now, when you're a professional athlete, how is that going to impact you? Or if you have an Olympic career, how is that going to impact you? So I get a lot of questions from both student athletes and their parents about what are they exactly agreeing to and what are they giving up in terms of their long-term intellectual property rights?
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I think that's one of the things for us, obviously, is from a legal perspective, some people might not think of that. But when you see it in there, a light bulb goes off and goes, wait a second, you know, let's carefully look through this. Let's talk about some of the other things that we've seen kind of in the name, image, and likeness space. I think of t-shirt production right now is certainly a popular thing. A lot of athletes are, you know, starting to put their name and their images on these t-shirts. A lot of companies are then selling them online. Athletes are making a percentage. Business is making a percentage. What should athletes be thinking about before they go and try and strike a t-shirt deal?
Yeah, another great question. I think branded merchandise is a great way for student athletes to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness. And there's a ton of opportunity there from the group licensing perspective, whether it's jerseys or something with their picture on it, you know, a picture of a student athlete dunking a basketball, something like that. There's so many great opportunities. Again, I'll go back to the long-term intellectual property rights. I think student athletes should consider what they're giving up long-term. I think student athletes should absolutely be concerned about the royalty percentage, what they're making and what they might be making either with a different provider or potentially producing the shirts and t-shirts on their own. I think one of the things that I've seen a lot of pop up in the last few months is student athletes starting to produce and sell their own merchandise. Even a couple of clients of mine have been doing that. And that's, I think, an opportunity for student athletes to capture a much larger percentage of the revenue, of course, but also gain some really valuable skills along the way in terms of running their own business, marketing their own business. So, you know, for going down that avenue, I always recommend for student athletes to consider starting an LLC where they can protect their individual assets beyond just what they're doing in terms of t-shirt sales for the merchandise revenue. I think an LLC is something that most, if not all, student athletes that are engaging in NIL deals should consider pretty strongly, particularly if they're going to be the ones that are selling their own merchandise.
What are some of the steps, actually, as you talk about that, you know, to set up an LLC? How easy is that to do? What should they be thinking about? What do they need to prepare for that? And just kind of give a general overview of that.
Yeah, the LLC registration process is fairly straightforward. So it differs each state. So you register an LLC with your state secretary of state agency. So whichever state you're located in, I would typically recommend this be the student athlete's home state, although it could be the state where they go to school. Look up the Secretary of State's website and look for the steps that they're going to need to register. Typically, you'll have to pay a filing fee anywhere from $100 to $200, depending on the state, typically pretty nominal. You'll have to have a registered place of business. So your home address is typically what you would use. And other than that, the steps are pretty straightforward in order to get all the documentation for that.
Okay. And that helps protect, obviously, the athlete in situations as well. How does that help protect them?
Yeah. So with a limited liability company, essentially your personal assets are protected. And the only thing that could be at risk are the business assets. So let's say for some reason somebody sues you, there's a lawsuit against you or against your LLC, you're liable up to the point that you have assets in the business. Where if you have a registered LLC, your personal and individual assets would be protected. So I've seen clients that'll have an LLC, you know, for student athletes, for example, one LLC for, you know, their merchandise business, if they're selling t-shirts, a different LLC to manage their intellectual property. So they can sort of split it up as complexly as they can and protect as much of their personal assets as possible. And I think that's something that's super important for student athletes, particularly if they're generating a great deal of revenue from their name, image, and likeness, which a lot of student athletes have been. We've seen student athletes earn millions of dollars from NIL deals. So I think it's really important for them to consider steps to protect those personal assets. So they wouldn't be on the line if for some reason they end up in some legal hot water.
Yeah, which can happen sometimes with images and videos and everything else. So I can certainly appreciate that.
Right. Absolutely.
Let's talk about home state, college state. You know, as an agent, I have made sure to make sure that I'm registered in the states where I am representing athletes. I'm going through that process. Sometimes the process takes longer than you might think, but I think it's a really smart move. Obviously, every state is different, and I've experienced that. What would be your suggestion to an agent? And I also want to make sure we define agent, because that's another piece of this puzzle. But let's start with that. So typically, there has been a general sports agent who represents an athlete who wants to play at the pro level. That has been more the typical agent role. Now with name, image, and likeness, we're starting to see other agents, other advisors or marketing agents start to represent athletes. And I think it's important we define that those are two different things, because those agents have two different roles. And that, explain to me, for our audience, the difference between a traditional sports agent who is trying to help get them a pro contract and the difference between a marketing agent that has now become so popular.
Yeah, they're completely different. And the law in some instances treats them as the same. The law in some instances treats them as different. And I think the NIL era has created a sort of interesting dichotomy between the two. Traditionally, we have professional sports agents that are registered with a players union to represent players who play for that league or members of that union. So, for example, we have the NFLPA. So if you want to be an NFL agent, you need to register with and take the tests and exams and certifications for the NFLPA. And once you're registered by the union, you're able to represent current or prospective NFL players. So it's very different in the marketing sense, because there is no union to represent players for marketing. That is completely different than negotiating playing contracts with a team. So for your professional sports agents, you're typically you're capped by some kind of royalty percentage that's set by the union. So sometimes it's 2-5% or under 10%, or depending on the league, it's a little different. And they're able to collect a commission on the professional salary. So that's very different from a marketing agent, which goes out and sources brand deals for either student athletes now or professional athletes, so endorsement deals. And they typically will also take a percentage of the deal, although it's much more so based on the numbers that they're able to negotiate with the brand as opposed to the numbers that they're able to negotiate with the team. So we don't have any particular union that marketing agents who are working with college athletes on NIL need to register with. But one thing that prospective agents need to be conscious of is that most states, a good number of states, probably about 30 or so off the top of my head, require that athlete agents be registered with the state. And most folks might think off the top of their head, oh, well, if I'm not negotiating professional sports contracts, I'm not a sports agent. I don't need to be registered as a sports agent. That's not true most of the time. Most of the time, folks who are negotiating endorsement deals and working as marketing agents for collegiate or professional athletes or high school athletes, they are considered by the law to be sports agents, and they need to be registered with the appropriate state entities.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation. And I'm so glad you outlined that, because that's one question I get a lot. And especially with the Uniform Athlete Agent Act, you put down on there that you need to contact somebody in 72 hours and you're signing with an agent. You know, that gets eyeballs opened real quick from these athletes, and also from their parents. You know, they're trying to look out for, you know, their son or daughter and make sure they don't make a mistake. I think that there's also been kind of a bad rap on agents, because of some that have not really lived up to the expectations that people have of a professional sports agent. And I think that it's really important that athletes make sure they know who they're signing with and what they're signing, so that they can be professionally either represented by a professional sports agent or a marketing agent who is going to help you in every sense of the way with your marketing and your brand deals and things like that. So,
absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that the Uniform Athlete Agent Act maybe hasn't quite caught up to the new legislation that we have surrounding name, image, and likeness, and that may change in the future. But certainly that disclosure that's required to be in there about you may lose your eligibility, certainly a red flag that concerns a lot of athletes and their parents, understandably so. But those disclosures at this point are still required to be in there, because those laws were written when we didn't have NIL in college or high school. And if you did sign with a professional agent, you would lose your eligibility to compete. So I think those laws eventually will catch up to the current landscape, but as of yet, they haven't.
Right. Yep. Makes sense. And then let's talk about some of the things that I think are interesting from a legal perspective as it gets into branding and marketing, which is going to be when I talk with athletes, there's two things that they own in my mind that are a little bit unique than the traditional uniform, which we know they're not going to be able to touch. However, when you've got custom cleat companies out there, being able to design cleats for football players, softball players, soccer athletes, that provides an opportunity to brand your cleats. Now, obviously, I don't think we're going to see anything potentially with a major brand on it because that would be a name, image, and likeness deal, although you never know. Some schools are different, et cetera, but that's another area to get into. But there's also the opportunity to brand it as your own. So I think about goalies, especially hockey goalies, where they have this mask and they can put anything they want on it, essentially. And if they were to have their own brand, although that wouldn't be a name, image, and likeness deal, they could certainly put their own athlete logo on it. And they have the right to do that, don't they?
Well, they should, but the question is going to become, what is the school policy regarding the uniform regulations that they have in that specific sport or at that specific school? So we've got a really interesting dichotomy for branded apparel and merchandise, not necessarily sponsored, but branded with an individual's personal brand between professional sports and college sports. So in professional sports, that's something that's collectively bargained between the players' union and the league. So for example, in the NBA, NBA players are allowed to choose what kind of shoes they want to wear, but that's it. Beyond that, they're not allowed to choose any specific branded or logoed headbands or armbands or anything like that, which is very different from if you look at Major League Baseball, where professional baseball players are pretty much allowed to wear whatever they want beyond the actual uniform. So whether it's batting gloves, whether it's a catcher's chest protector or helmet, that can all have their personal brand on it, in addition to a logo like Nike or Under Armour or something like that as well, which we see is very common. So student athletes, because they don't collectively bargain with universities or the NCAA, they're sort of just at the mercy to the schools and whatever policies they enact or whatever contracts the school has with its equipment or apparel providers. So if the school has a contract with Adidas or Nike or Under Armour that says, you know, this is what student athletes need to wear, this is the uniform, they're not allowed to wear anything else, that's sort of what the student athletes have to adhere to. And the student athletes may or may not be able to wear something with their own personal branding and logo on it, whether it's a helmet or whether it's cleats. So it differs school to school, which I think is really interesting. And each student athlete would have to consult their student athlete handbook or consult someone in their compliance department to see what they're able to do. Beyond just personal branding, I know for a fact, most schools prohibit student athletes from engaging in NIL activity when they're in competition. So, you know, for example, we see all the time I'll go back to Major League Baseball. We see catchers with, let's say it's an Adidas or Under Armour chest protector, even though the uniforms for MLB wide are Nike. So we see some competing branding there, which is negotiated through their collective bargaining agreement. So student athletes would not be able to do that under most school policies and some state laws.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the space evolves. And one of the reasons I mentioned it is because you think about athletes who will recognize on their cleats, maybe the passing of a loved one with initials, things like that, or, you know, maybe they're raising money for a cause or something like that. And so they're trying to put that on there. So it'll be interesting to see how the space evolves. And as we saw, and I think it's interesting you bring it up that, you know, they're not allowed to integrate their name, image, and likeness activities during competition. And one of the latest revisions that came out from the NIL guidelines was no mentioning of name, image, and likeness contracts or brands during post-game or pre-game press conferences and everything else. Because I remember last year during the basketball tournament, during the women's tournament, there was a player that went on there and was like, yeah, go to my site, buy this t-shirt, you know, like, and I'm like, that's brilliant. And I'm like, but somebody's going to shut that down real quick.
Right.
Sure
enough,
they did, you know? So I think it's just an interesting space and something that's, I think, going to continue to evolve. Let's talk about the future of name, image, and likeness and where you see things headed, because right now it's a state-by-state legislation. It's very muddy, if you will. Some states allow it, some states don't. There's different schools that, of course, a lot of the private institutions don't want their logos being used. Other public ones I've found are more open to it because they want to be able to get the brand awareness and things like that. Let's talk about where you see the future legislation of NIL going in 5 to 10 years and what major changes you think might be coming.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't think anyone really has a crystal ball to say that we know definitively what's going to happen from a legislative standpoint. I think what we do know is that uniform legislation is priority number one for the NCAA. And the incoming NCAA president is the now former Massachusetts governor, Charlie Baker. Yep. And to me, the one indication of the NCAA saying, we're going to go outside of academia, we're going to go outside of college athletics, and we're going to hire a politician to lead our organization going forward. To me, the only thing that indicates is they're going to Congress and they're saying, we need to get some uniform legislation here. Now, what the NCAA is looking for from
I think
Congress,
it's interesting, John, I do think it's interesting that he is a former athlete as well. I think he adds that component, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's interesting as well. You know, and that's something that I know for a fact is a priority at the NCAA, as well as to hire former student athletes to have a little bit more perspective of living the student athlete experience. So I think Governor Baker certainly does have that. You know, to me, looking at what the NCAA is looking for from Congress is uniformity to a substantial degree so that we don't have this sort of policy gridlock between differing state laws. But I think the NCAA is really interested in getting an antitrust exemption. So they're really looking for Congress to provide a limited antitrust exemption to allow the NCAA to prevent what some coaches have called tampering and things like that, where the NCAA has those guidelines, but can they enforce those legally? I think that's priority number one for the NCAA at this point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And then I think too, you know, as I look at what's coming next, we talk about 5 to 10 years. I feel strongly that a lot of high school athletes are going to start to see what's going on, obviously, at the college level. They're looking at schools, you know, to go play sports, and they're going to find all these athletes and, you know, brand ambassador deals and things like that. You know, how young can this start, you know, and are there any limitations for ages and deals and anything that they need to, you know, be aware of below the college level, because we know it's coming?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And you talked about sort of the short-term changes we're seeing. I think as of a couple of weeks ago, we're up to 26 states that permit high school name, image, and likeness deals. So we're over the tipping point. My guess would be within the next couple of years, all 50 states are going to allow high school student athletes to engage in NIL deals. And I think you raise an interesting question. How young can you go? I don't know that there's necessarily any limitations on that. We see all the time for non-athlete influencers where it's, you know, the one that
TikToks,
comes to mind is kids reviewing
YouTube.
Toys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I know there's one kid who does toy reviews on YouTube who makes like $20 million a year or something like that.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, something like that, it's absolutely on the table. I don't know why athletes would be restricted from it beyond the traditional competition restrictions. So I think for all high school or middle school student athletes that are looking to engage in any kind of NIL activity, they need to make sure with their state high school athletic association they're okay and their state laws are okay, because it'd really be a shame to see someone do an NIL deal when they're in, let's say, seventh or eighth grade, and then they get to high school and they're ineligible to compete because that was the rule at the high school level at that point. So I think it's certainly something to be conscious of, because in athletics, we have these state rules as well. And competition rules sort of beyond what your toy reviewer on YouTube might be able to do.
Yep. And I mean, I also think too, one of the things I've forecasted out, I think in the next 5 to 10 years, is that a ton of athletes are going to have some type of brand ambassador partnership, whether it's a promo code to sell some stuff, whether it's, you know, being a partner in some way. That's the other thing that I think is so hard about enforcement, is the difference between a nil deal and where you're receiving money versus athletes being ambassadors and being able to make commission, you know, on these clothing sales or on product sales. To me, it's actually all the same. They need to be treated the same way, but I think a lot of athletes don't see it that way. And I think it's important that that's where the education comes in, is if you're going to do anything with a brand and you're going to be compensated, that is a name, image, and likeness opportunity, correct?
Right. Any commercial activity at this point is going to be viewed as a name, image, and likeness opportunity. So for student athletes, whether they're doing affiliate marketing through social media, or they're doing just a one-off sponsored post endorsement deal, anything like that is going to be viewed as NIL activity, including even opening their own business. Right. Plenty of student athletes have opened businesses that are sort of unrelated to their personal name, image, and likeness, but they're using their name, image, and likeness to promote the business. Yeah. I can even think of an Indiana basketball student athlete who just opened a real estate company. So it's not necessarily tied to his image as a Indiana University men's basketball player. But he's certainly using his NIL to promote the business, to build brand awareness. So that certainly all falls into that category.
Yep, that makes sense. And then I guess one of the other things I'd like to kind of close with here today is, talk to people about how they can work with you and your services, because I think you offer a tremendous amount of expertise.
Yeah, so I really can help student athletes with anything related to the NIL space or unrelated to the NIL space, anything adjacent to the NIL space. So to me, I think one of the things that student athletes should all be thinking about is if they're signing a contract with an agent, whether it's a marketing agent or a professional sports agent, you should have an attorney look it over, in my opinion. You want to make sure that you're getting a fair deal, but you're also not giving up any long-term rights or anything like that, future earnings or compensation. So to me, that's something that I can help with. I think also student athletes should always be aware of any kind of intellectual property implications of the NIL deals that they are signing, or any activity they have on social media in terms of their trademarks, their logos. I think that's something that you really need to think big picture, and you don't want to wait until it's too late. So I think to me, intellectual property is always something to be concerned with, contracts as well. Really, really any contracts that come up, in my opinion, you should have an attorney look it over.
That's great advice, Josh. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast here today, and look forward to, of course, keeping in touch with you. And there's going to be a lot more in this space. So I would love to check back in with you, have you on the podcast again. But in the meantime, want to thank you for joining us here today. And thank you for helping athletes with all that you do. It's really impressive.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Greg, for having me. I enjoyed our conversation today, and look forward to connecting with you again in the future.
All right. So that is Josh Freezer. He is an attorney in the name, image, and likeness space. If you're interested, you can certainly find more in the show notes. So for now, I'm Greg Glenn. We're glad you could tune in.
And stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.